Western society has accepted as unquestionable a technological imperative that is quite as arbitrary as the most primitive taboo. Not merely the duty to foster invention and constantly to create technological novelties, but equally the duty to surrender to these novelties unconditionally, just because they are offered, without respect to their human consequences. And that was said by Lewis Mumford. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Technology, folks, there is no doubt that technology has been a huge boon to our existence and has made many aspects of our lives very easy and very convenient for us. But what has been the human cost of this technology? Really, when you look at the human body and you see how biologically impaired we are, virtually operating to 3% of our capability because most of our DNA is locked down, and when you see the intellectually impaired state that most of humankind is in due to their consumption of toxic and brain-inhibiting substances such as fluoride, then I believe that this provides a very suitable and usable backdrop for the introduction of technology over the human experience. And the way technology is sold to us as improving the human experience, when really, when you look at technology, much of it, what it appears to do is to, in fact, mimic the human experience, mimic our higher senses, mimic what we would be capable of were we online, were our bodies fully functional, were we operating to more than 3% of our genetic capability. And something else that has been the result of technology, something that has been quite subtle and almost unnoticed by many people, is the way it has served to disconnect us from nature, to disconnect us from the earth upon which we live, and in many ways to disconnect us from the people around us. Because although technology such as the internet has made the world smaller, mobile phones and the instant communication that we all have now, this has served to connect everybody in many ways. But because with many people technology is in fact the preferred means of communication, it has served very much to impair people's ability to develop normal life skills and normal hands-on one-on-one communication with other individuals around them. Very often you will see kids, teenagers in the same room texting to each other because they feel far more comfortable doing so than they do actually communicating face-to-face. And one of the big dangers that we're seeing develop from this, folks, is that even in everyday life, people are immersed in a virtual world. Even when they are out in the real world, they are still immersed in a virtual world, still texting to each other, still surfing online or whatever on their mobile phones and on their iPads. They're not paying attention to what's going on around them. And because there is so much information online, some of it relevant and some of it completely irrelevant, it's served as a huge distraction to global events. It's served as a huge distraction from what's going on around people. People simply don't know what's going on in the real world because they're too busy locked into the virtual world. And the virtual world is all about, usually, the latest trend, which clip of a dog on a skateboard has gone viral, and who's got the latest hairdo. Most of it isn't really about what's going on in the world, and so it provides the perfect backdrop for the controlling hand to basically get away with what it's doing and to further lock our societies down while people are distracted with the virtual world. Take England, for example. I mentioned a few months ago on the show that they'd actually made it illegal in England to be homeless. That's right, folks, it's now a crime to be homeless if you live in the UK. And of course, the government raises the prices on everything and forces people into positions where they are homeless, and it does this so that it can grab the people and put them into the prison system, where it can use people to make number plates and make all the things that they need to run their slavery system. So basically what we're seeing here is people being forced into homelessness so they can then be nabbed by the government and put into forced labour camps. And this is what we're seeing in the UK today, folks. This is called freedom. And really, they're getting away with this type of activity, and there aren't people on the streets protesting about this, and there aren't people making noise about it, because people are very often far too distracted with the virtual world that they now live in to really notice what's going on around them. And even were they to attempt to do something with what's going on around them, very often these people have underdeveloped life skills, and so even if they wish to make a difference, they simply don't know how to go about it, because they don't really know how to communicate. And of course, we have things such as the police force as the first line of defense that the people must go through. And the police force are too stupid to really know how to even communicate with normal people, and too stupid to question authority at all. And so when you attempt to address any problems that you have with government or with the society or with the council or anything, to try to go through these mindless drones is almost an impossibility. So it's kind of like a brick wall that's been placed there between the people and the ruling hand that controls them. And it's been put in place because, as I said, people are very often distracted with technology and they simply can't find a way through this brick wall of stupidity, which is our local law enforcement officials. And I know it's disturbing to think about our law enforcement officials as being stupid, but unfortunately such is the case, folks, especially with the new induction regulations for the police force, whereby anybody with an IQ over, I think it's about 105, is not acceptable for induction into the police force. So they like to keep these individuals just a few points over double-digit IQs. So many of them simply don't have the mental capacity to question authority and are just plain stupid. And those other ones who may not be quite so stupid, well, they're usually too thuggish and too brutish to really be interested in helping anybody anyway. And unfortunately, what we see from our police force is that this is where most of the crime in our society comes from. Most of the brutality and breaking of the law is in fact the result of corrupt police officials and their actions. Just recently, for example, we saw the case of a man by the name of Adam Tucker, who was kidnapped by the state police in Victoria and incarcerated in a mental facility simply because he had information which may have led to the release of a man called Andrew Snowden, who was kidnapped by police in Queensland and placed into a mental facility. And bear in mind that the way Adam Tucker was arrested before being placed into this mental facility was by having 6 or 8 police officers arrive at his home in the wee hours of the morning before dawn and use an axe to chop down the back door of his house and forcefully enter into his house, accost him and tie him up in zip ties and drag him off to the nut house. Now imagine if you were someone who was suffering mental issues, folks, to have 6 or 8 terrorists in police uniform chop your back door down with an axe would of course do little more than perhaps induce a severe psychological episode or do permanent damage to you. I mean, let's face it, folks, chopping someone's door down with an axe is hardly the way you would treat someone with a mental problem. So just bear that in mind when you look at this case, folks, because the actions of the police were completely and utterly uncalled for. I mean, overkill to the highest degree. You don't use an axe to knock on someone's door, not unless you are a terrorist, and this is exactly what modern police are, as unfortunate as it is to say so. And one might also question where the mainstream media was on this story, and very predictably, folks, the mainstream media were nowhere to be found, as is always the case, because the mainstream media are always the first to defend police corruption at every opportunity. You see, it's all part of the same system, folks. The mainstream media does not report the news anymore, but simply functions as the propaganda and public relations arm of government. Forget about any real journalism, folks. That simply does not exist within the mainstream media anymore. And if one does wish to see journalism, then the only place they're going to find it, of course, is online from the alternate media. And this is exactly why the alternate media was formed. Simply out of a necessity to reinstate journalism into the news that people are receiving. And of course, we only find out about things such as the Andrew Snowden case and the Adam Tucker case due to the actions of the alternate media, folks, because Like I said, the mainstream media only ever served to defend the actions of the corrupt police officers that carried out this kidnapping. And look, folks, let's just be honest about it, because these scumbags can justify their actions all they want. They can say they were acting within the parameters of whichever fictional law they wish to say, and they can say that they're protecting society all they like. But if individuals and organizations can be appraised by their actions, which of course they should, then there should be little doubt in anybody's mind that the Australian Police are in fact a government-sponsored terrorist organisation which does little other than support corporate corruption and ensure that whichever corrupt legislation is handed to them by government criminals is carried out to the letter. And of course they do this under the guise of protecting society when in fact their actions are doing exactly the opposite. I mean, honestly, folks, fancy chopping someone's door down with an axe. Why would the police do this? And, of course, there is only one reason they would do it, and that is to induce a state of fear into the person inside. And when someone takes deliberate steps to instill fear and terror into someone, it is called terrorism. And you see, this is why I am constantly referring to the police as government-sponsored terrorists, folks, because the police are constantly employing terrorist tactics to use in their so-called protecting of society. And again, folks, a lot of this has occurred due to the fact that people are very much immersed in a virtual world. And it's been this way for quite a while. It's actually been this way since well before the introduction of the internet, because ever since we've had televisions, people have been living in a virtual world, because people don't really experience the world around them anymore. They don't really pay attention to what's going on around them. They don't go to the town meetings and hear what's going on from the mouths of the people. Rather than that, they get told what's going on by a news service. And if this news service is not populated by independent journalists who are free to report things as they actually are, then what is it? And it seems that this is a question that people very often fail to ask when they look at their mainstream media. Where do these people get their information from? Because if you've ever been involved in any type of newsworthy event, or been present when some newsworthy event has happened, and then you've seen the reports that have appeared on the news regarding that event, they're very often quite different to what you witnessed. I found this myself way back in the 1970s. And so what you've got to understand the mainstream media to be is essentially a virtual world that is providing a virtual vision of the world to you. And the actual world, were you to go out and experience it yourself, may well be very different from the one that you see on the television and the one that you see in the way it's portrayed to you on the television. The Middle East, for example, the way the Middle East is portrayed to people in Western nations is very different to what the Middle East is actually like. The way the people of the Middle East are portrayed is actually very different. I mean, and look at America as well. Look at the America that is portrayed to the world on the television, in the movies, and it's actually very different to the America that you experience were you to live there or to go and visit the place. And so again, it's a virtual world that you're experiencing, because you're getting reality basically dictated to you by a little box in the corner of your screen that tells you that this is what the world is like. And very often we don't go and experience the world ourselves to ever discover anything different. And if we do go and experience the world, if we go and travel, we go to little designated travel places that we're allowed to go. They have the little tourist areas that they have all around the planet. You'll notice that if you've traveled a lot, that doesn't matter where you go, everywhere you go is the same as everywhere else, because they have these little tourist areas there where they've got the same tourist shops, the same chain stores, the same things for you to experience everywhere you go. So it keeps you safe from the local culture, keeps you safe from ever finding out that the world could be any different to what we perceive it to be in the West. And the parts that are different are unsafe, and Westerners shouldn't go there because we should stay away from these uncivilized places. And this is the way the world is portrayed to anybody who has ever traveled the world as a tourist. That's why I think when you travel, it's important to leave the beaten track and just go where you will and really have a look at the place. But what I'm getting at here, folks, is that it's important to experience the real world rather than the virtual world. And this is in regard to every aspect of your life, really. Because when you're looking at society around you, when you're looking at what's going on in the Middle East, when you're looking at what's going on with the wars, when you're looking at the whole economic situation, the political situation, all you're really doing is getting what you're fed from the television. And they give you this confusing idea of what the world actually is, and they instill into people the feeling that you're just a little person and you can never really do anything, and that this is just what's happening. You see, you notice on the television, it's never about the politicians asking you for permission to do anything that they may be doing, to extract more taxes from you, or all the things that they do in the self-styled dictatorship that they seem to be well on the way to setting up, because really that's what it is, folks. When they can just dictate policy the way they do, well, this is a dictatorship. It matters little that we replace the leaders now and then. If it's simply a mechanism that dictates policy, then it's a functional, rotational dictatorship. That's all it is. We just elect new CEOs for the dictatorship mechanism, and they let us do that because it gives us the illusion that we have a choice in the matter. But really, it's just a dictatorship, if that's the way it's going to function. So they never ask us our permission for anything they do. They just enact more and more legislation designed to extract more and more of our rights from us, to steal more of the wealth of our nations, and to further impoverish the people. And they get away with it by simply all getting together and voting on it, folks. That's all they do. Hey, what can we do today to steal a little bit more from them? Hey, we can do this. Do you all vote that we do this? And while nobody's looking, they all vote yes, and suddenly it becomes a law. And then you've got the police out there carrying out acts of virtual terrorism in order to extract revenue from the populace at large. And that's what's going on, folks. And the police really are getting quite out of control with their actions, my friends. They really are. Recently we saw a police officer smash a woman's window and drag her out of her car and arrest her simply because the woman refused to roll her window down all the way in her car. So we're seeing more and more narcissistic and sociopathic and psychopathic people being employed as police officers. And these are, in fact, the type of police officers that our government wants now. Another very interesting thing that we've seen brought in is the introduction of stun cuffs in some states in the United States. These are handcuffs that will deliver an electric charge. Folks, they may as well just get cattle prods and start using them on people. I mean, there's very little difference, is there? So how often are we going to see these stun cuffs and stun collars on people? And what are they going to be used for? And never forget, folks, that terrorism is violence or the threat of violence carried out against civilians as a means of coercion. This is the dictionary definition of terrorism, and this is what police do every single day. And this is why it's important to make some noise about all this, folks, but of course we have to stand united to make this noise, as we've recently seen with the Andrew Snowden case and the Adam Tucker case. And I believe there's another man now in Maryborough in Queensland who has also been kidnapped by police and placed into a mental institution for attempting to stand up for his rights. This is the danger that we face by attempting to stand up against this system on our own, which is why it is so important to put down the stuff you have with the people around you. Break down the barriers and the division that you have with your neighbours and the people within your society, and build bridges to these people. Build some common unity within your community so that the whole community may stand together, so that we may reinstate our rights, because it's the tall poppies that get hacked down. It's the nail that sticks up above the boards that gets hammered down quickly. And even though these people that are standing up now are paving the way for freedom for the rest of us, it is very likely that they will spend the rest of their lives in a state of incarceration or victimization, simply because they were the first ones to stand up. This is why it is so important for us all to stand united as a community. There's nothing to fear by uniting with your community, folks. Everything to fear comes from the system itself, and you may well be in fear of the system, but that fear will subside if you have a united community, because the power of a united community can literally change the world. We just have to put down our stuff in order to make it happen, folks. We've got to realize that all of the stuff that we've got with our community, all of the stuff, the division that we have with our neighbors, this is all contrived. It's all programs. None of it is real. None of it is necessary. Most of it is based on contrived parameters of social division that have been inflicted over our consciousness and superimposed over our mentality. None of it is real. Strip all the social standing and monetary value away from people and you find people that are all just the same as each other. They have the same wants, the same needs, the same desires, the same basic requirements for life. And we need to see that and recognize that in people, and we need to honor that in ourselves and honor that in others so that we can honor our differences, honor our own uniqueness, and honor everybody else's uniqueness and stand together to express our creative potential and create a better world than the one we currently have and change the direction we are currently going in. It's up to us to do it, folks. Nobody else is going to. And if we don't do so, then the chance for this to happen may well be lost forever. And this is why it's important for people to pay attention. It's important for people to get out of the virtual world. It's important for people to break down the division in their community. Break down the division they believe they have with their neighbors. Break down the social division they perceive to be real. Because all of it is programs, folks, and we are in a very, very precarious situation. If we had government and we had police whose goal was to protect society, we wouldn't be in the state that we're in. But we don't. We have government who is determined to steal the wealth of society, and we have police who are not intelligent enough to question the actions of government and who are programmed to be violent, programmed to be intolerant and lack empathy, and even screened so that these are the type of people that are being inducted into the police force, and then they're given weapons and they're told to go out and to enforce corporate corruption. And that's what they're doing. And the government is always calling for more and more police, saying they need more and more police, and so the police population is rising dramatically. And these people are thugs and brutes who have deadly weapons on their belts, and they are going out and inflicting themselves upon society in the worst ways imaginable. And the only people who can combat this situation, folks, are the people themselves. The only people who can do anything about it are us. The governments aren't going to do anything about it. The governments are creating this situation themselves. And it's no good standing up as a single protester and attempting to deal with the situation through court or anything like that, because we've seen what's happening. What we need to do is have a united community. We need to go to public meetings. We need to go to council meetings. We need to go to town meetings. We need to go to any type of meetings that we're seeing, any type of meetings that have been staged. And we need to start raising these issues with the local community, because it's important that the local community get informed on what is happening to our society. And sure, bring the council members and police members along. Let them hear what we're saying as well, because these people need to know. I'm sure there are many people within the police force that actually do have some intelligence and would be interested in the concerns that society has towards the actions of police. But they need to understand that we're not going to take a backward step to them. They need to understand that we're having these meetings in order to address these problems. We're not just here to talk about them and to tell the police that we're not happy with their actions and to have the police say, well, we're sorry, but we have no choice, we have to do this. We need police to step above the fiction and to realize that they are people just the same as everybody else, and that if the people that we elect to positions of trust, namely the politicians, are enacting legislation which is giving the police the rights to basically use terrorism against the general population, then these politicians who are enacting this legislation and daring to call it law need to be removed from office and held accountable for their actions. And who are we going to get to do that if the police won't do it? Because that's who should do it. Because that's what we employ the police to do. We actually employ them to look after society and to protect society and to ensure that criminals are put out of action and that society is kept safe and free from assault and intimidation by outside forces. And really, folks, all the assault and intimidation that the people within society are subject to comes from government and police, and that's what we need to address. And so, yeah, go to these meetings and invite the police and council members along so that they do hear our concerns and so that they do hear the direction we are going to take the world now. And it's important that we have that type of an attitude as well, folks. It's important that these people understand that this is the direction we are going now. We're not holding a meeting in order to ask permission. We're not holding a meeting to petition government to please do what we ask them to do. We are holding a meeting in order to find a method to mandate that the government do what we want the government to do. Otherwise, we intend to dismiss the government through the power of a united community. Because we have the power to do that, folks. We have the power to step above the fiction. Every one of us. All we have to do is choose to do so. And again, folks, this will only ever happen and only ever happen in an effective manner if we choose to unite as a community. Unity is so important, folks. And as I've so often said, this unity will only ever come from the respect that one gains when they truly understand themselves. Because when you truly understand yourself and truly begin to respect yourself, then respect for others comes by default. I really do believe that that is the case. And those who do not respect other people and those who have stuff with other people are locked into that state of mind simply because they do not truly know and respect themselves. But I think it's break time here, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there for now and we'll go and have a break. Thank you for spending this time with me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company and I will speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, folks, the reason I've gone through all of the things I went through in the start of the show today is in order to help people become aware of exactly what is being constructed around us, because we are seeing the very, very slow implementation of an extremely totalitarian system that's being put in place around us. And there's been many people that have been ringing the warning bells about this for a great number of years, I myself being one of them. And for many years now, I've been attempting to bring you this information in a very calm and very rational and very matter-of-fact type of way, and in a very simple manner. I avoid using big words or over-intellectualizing any type of situation because I think it's counterproductive, and I've been calmly attempting to help the world wake up to the real danger that we're facing for a long time. But it is getting to a state now where things are really, really being locked down around us to the extreme. And I think this is being done out of fear. I think the elite are very, very scared at the moment because of the amount of people who are waking up and the amount of response they're seeing from the people around the planet. We've seen massive protests all around the world. And we've seen massive false flags being staged around the world to combat this awakening. And incredibly false reporting coming from the mainstream media, whereby almost every story they report is virtually backwards to the truth these days. You simply can't believe a word you get from the mainstream media anymore. It's really gotten beyond a joke. But the point is, we're facing a very serious situation, folks, and it is time for the people to wake up. It's time for the people to start making some noise. And if you're someone out there who is aware of the global situation, it's time to start making some noise in your local community. Having perhaps weekly meetings or gatherings in the town hall or even discussion nights where you perhaps watch a documentary or perhaps play one of these radio shows and then discuss it afterwards. Or anything that you can think of to bring this information to the community and to empower the community and to break down the barriers in your community, because we all need to stand together to fix this problem, folks. The time for us to act is now. I mean, our governments are just out of control, folks. They really are. They're going from the sublime to the ridiculous. Here in Australia, the new sociopathic Prime Minister that we've got, Tony Abbott, and this man is an absolute sociopath, folks. I'm sure that if you looked up sociopath in the dictionary, there would likely be a little picture of Tony Abbott right there in the dictionary, simply in order to illustrate the term, because the man is a textbook sociopath. But he's now attempting to bring in new legislation which is going to make it illegal to boycott. Just consider that, folks. Boycotting is now illegal. It's illegal for you to refuse to buy the products of some company. He seriously thinks this is going to be law? I mean, this is how ridiculous these people are. Or maybe it's not going to be illegal for you to not buy the products, but it will be illegal for me to suggest that you don't buy the products, to suggest that you boycott this company because of the damage they're doing to whatever. Unbelievable, folks, just unbelievable. I think we could all boycott Tony Abbott. In fact, I think I'll get a new T-shirt that says Boycott Tony Abbott, and I'll just wear that around for the duration of his rule. I mean, it's just, it's beyond a joke, folks. This is what these people are doing. They're doing every single thing they can to try and control people. You know, there's fines now. You get fined if you leave your car unlocked. You know that, folks? You're not allowed to leave your car unlocked. Mind you, it is your car. You could be standing right next to it, but if you're not in the car and you leave it unlocked, they can issue a fine to you. We've got people in cities who have chickens who get fined if they let their chickens out of their chicken pen to free range around their backyard a little bit. Apparently the council says you're not allowed to do this because councils think they're government. Councils think they can make law when really they can't. They're breaking the law by doing so. And the only reason they get away with that is because the people are disunited. The people won't stand up and call them out on their illegal actions. And if someone does stand up, then they're a tall poppy. They get hacked down by the rest of the community. They get hacked down by their neighbours and they get pointed at. Oh, look at him. He was disgraceful. He tried to stand up against the council. He broke the law and the council came and reprimanded him for it. So don't associate with him because he's a criminal type. You don't want to be around that guy. When really he's likely the only man in the neighbourhood who actually had the intelligence and the decency and the respect for himself and for others to stand up against the illegal actions of the council. Again, folks, it all depends on your perspective. I mean, here's an interesting perspective for you, folks. Earlier on, I was mentioning that there was another man in Queensland in Maribyrnong who was kidnapped by police and placed into a mental institution. And this was done for failing to appear in court, folks. Get this. The judge had the man committed to a mental institution for failing to appear in court when the man was actually in court, but the man simply failed to identify himself as the name. And the judge basically said, well, if you're not the name, then I can't see you. And because you're saying you're not the name, then you need to be arrested under the Mental Health Act. I would suggest that if the judge couldn't see the person who was standing right there before them in the court simply because the person didn't say they were ink spots on a piece of paper, then it is the judge who should be arrested and imprisoned under the Mental Health Act. Again, folks, it's just a matter of perspective. But this is how much these people are abusing their power. They're literally using these type of excuses to incarcerate people who are choosing to stand up against the system. And you can see where it's going. Look at the new homeless laws in England. If it's illegal to be homeless, what happens when you're evicted? What happens in that space? If you're a person who has spoken out against government, what happens in that moment when you are evicted from your accommodation and you are on your way to someone else's place to be looked after? You're on your way to find new accommodation. What happens in that instant when you're thrown out of your house if you cannot give the police a fixed address where you currently live? What happens when the legislation to incarcerate people for being homeless is not required to go through court? What happens when a police officer can simply arrest someone who is homeless and incarcerate them right there on the spot for being homeless? What happens when the law has been taken to that degree, if it hasn't already, then what happens in that moment, that initial first moment when you are kicked out of your house by the bank and you are homeless in that moment? Will this give the police the ability to simply arrest you as soon as the bank throws you out and lock you straight into a labor camp? Of course it will. And don't think the police and government wouldn't do this, because the fact is that they would love to do this, because this is their ultimate plan. And this is how they intend to deal with anybody who chooses to speak out against the slavery system. And that's why they're coming down so hard on these people now. This is why they're putting people in mental institutions for attempting to claim their rights in court, because they want to make examples of people. And they know that they need to do this before the community unites, because once the community unites, it's game over for the rulers. And that is why it is so important for us to pay attention, and why it is so important for us to unite as a community and to address this problem now. Because if we don't, and we choose to simply turn our backs on it, then it's just going to get worse, and it's going to get to the point where the people around you in the community are just too frightened to ever stand up. And they're getting much that way now. And so, you know, we need to start taking things to the next level. And we need to do it now while we've still got a lot of people who are motivated enough and willing enough to actually stand up and make a difference. We really now have the direction that we need. We know what to do. We know what the problem is. And we have the legal tools, we have the lawful tools, we have the spiritual tools to be able to deal with this problem. Because really that's what it is, folks. It's a spiritual problem. That's what's wrong with the planet. More than anything, it's a spiritual sickness that has taken over mankind, and we need to rectify this problem while we still have the numbers to do it. And I believe that the numbers are growing, actually, folks. So it isn't a matter of while we still have the numbers to do it, it's while we still have the courage to do it, while we still have the motivation to do it, because the numbers are growing and the numbers will continue to grow. The more and more the government attempts to lock things down, they will just continue to grow as a result of the lockdown. The government is actually working about bringing about its own demise through its totalitarian actions, because they're just making too many mistakes now, folks. It's becoming far too obvious what's going on here. And it's causing the people of the world to wake up in ever-increasing numbers. And so now more than ever is the time for people to act. See, that's the problem that we see, is that when someone says something like that, oh, look, the world is waking up in massive amounts of numbers, people sit back and don't do anything because they think it's okay. Everybody's waking up, and so everybody else is going to do something. But it's up to each individual out there to act. You've got to be leading by example in all that you do in your community. I think that is the most important thing that everybody can do, is to lead by example. Be a shining star. Be a bright light. Be a source of strength and a source of help and a source of comfort to people. Be all that you can be. Be a pleasure to be around. Question authority on every single occasion you can do so, but do it in a polite and eloquent way. And do it with people around you so people can hear, people can see how you're addressing this authority and how you're questioning it. And when you speak to police officers, and when you speak to lawyers, and when you speak to council members and politicians and all of these people, speak to the actual people. Don't speak to their office. Speak to the man or the woman within the costume. Forget about the costume. Speak to the human being, because that's what they are, folks. They're not something special. They're not something that has authority over you. They're just another human being, the same as you. They are just a unique expression of creation, and they have their perspective of creation, and they're wearing that uniform, and they have the perspective that they have because they're trained to be that way. So don't judge them too harshly, especially not police officers, folks, because frankly, these people are stupid. They're not smart enough to really be police officers. Not modern cops. They're just not smart enough, because they screen them so that they are always employing people with low IQs. So you can't really attempt to argue with these people or present anything logical to these people. You've just got to try to be polite to them and get to their human side, because some of them do have a human side. I mean, admittedly, the vast majority of modern police officers are simply thugs and sociopaths and narcissists, but there are some in there that do have a human side. And even the most narcissistic person often has a human side that you can reach if you treat them with respect. And so it's good to always have a respectful approach in all that you do, and especially if you're speaking publicly at public meetings or at town meetings or at gatherings you may be having, always maintain a level of politeness and always maintain a level of respect, folks, because it's very important that you do. It's very important that you work to empower the individuals within your community. Don't try to set yourself up as a leader, because you're not, and you don't want to be a leader. Leaders can be picked off. Leaders can destroy a movement, because if there is a leader, once the leader is taken out, the movement doesn't know what to do. And the movement that we need has to be a movement of consciousness. It has to be a movement of empowered individuals. And if you are someone out there who has this information and who is working to empower the community into action, then always work to empower each individual within the community. Don't create a movement that has a leader. Create a movement that has no leader. A movement which is simply an idea whose time has come. Work to empower the people around you to be their own leaders. That is the most important thing we can do. We don't want followers, folks. We're in the situation that we're in now because of mankind's propensity to follow. We all tend to follow where we are led, and we have to get over that hump. We've got to stop giving our power away to others and start leading ourselves, because that is where remedy lies. That's what freedom is, folks. I've said that to you many times in the past as well, that freedom is something that everyone is crying out for, but freedom is something that many people simply don't really want, because freedom is 100% self-responsibility, and many people don't want that. They want to have the freedom to call for whichever parent they would like to govern them, and really, that is not freedom, and it is our willingness to give our power away to others that has really been the cause of most of our problems. But again, folks, it's training that has brought this situation about. We give our freedom away, we give our power away, we give our lives away because we are trained to do so. We're trained to measure ourselves up to parameters that are fictional, that don't exist, which we can never really achieve. And even if we do achieve them, we get there and we realize that we are still incomplete because we missed out on ourselves along the way. We missed out on the art of our life. We were expressing ourselves according to the parameters that were created for us and given to us, and we were told to operate within these parameters in order to be a successful person. But we never found ourselves along the way. In fact, ourselves was the one thing that we missed. Many people may get to a position in life where they are vastly successful financially, but they really never achieved that special thing, that special spark that was in their heart when they were a child. They never really achieved that which they aspired to be because they were led away from it. As I said earlier, what we face really, folks, is a spiritual sickness. That is what has created the need for us, or the willingness of us, to give our power away. That is what has created the need for government. That is what has created so much of the sickness in our society. We've been led away from the art of our lives. We've been led away from nature. We've been led away from what is truly important and what is truly valuable. And we've been given toys and trinkets and technology and stuff that we perceive has value because it entertains us. It keeps us distracted. It keeps us busy. It keeps us in a state where we're not paying attention to ourselves, we're not paying attention to the world around us, we're caught up in the latest fad, and so we believe we are happy. But then we get through life and we realize that it was all just a facade, it was all just a game, it was all a clever ploy to lead the world to where it is now, and to ensure that no one ever questions their captors. No one ever questions their captivity. No one is even aware of their captivity. And yet all of mankind is held captive. All of civilized man is held captive anyway. Every man, woman, and child on the planet is held in a prison without walls, without bars, a prison of their mind, and a prison of perpetual debt slavery that ensures that people must participate within the system, otherwise they will be forced to live in a dispossessed state. Because all of mankind has been dispossessed from their true heritage, which is this wonderful earth that we live on, this planet of abundance that provides all we could ever need right here for us, all for free. But we've been led away from that, and we've been kept in a gilded cage that we cannot perceive with our five senses. And this cage is quite literally a cage of commerce that has been superimposed over our reality, whereby every one of us believes that we must pay, we must collect paper to have everything that nature provides for us. And as I've said so many times recently, this is a very, very powerful program that has been superimposed over people's minds. It's very difficult for people to break free of the commercial reality once it has been inflicted upon them. Many people cannot imagine life without commerce. And I was speaking to a friend the other day. He said to me, this is because the money system, the financial system, is actually based in Kabbalistic principles. It's all based on the Kabbalah. Apparently, that's where it comes from. This would make sense, as the Jewish system of usury is the real problem here, and so it doesn't surprise me that the monetary system itself and the whole concept of money itself would be based on Kabbalistic principles. But I think there's a better way, folks. I don't particularly know what that way is, but I think we are going to find it once we become aware of the inherent flaws in the way we do things now. Once we become aware of the inherent flaws in this financial system, perhaps we will think up another one. And hopefully it will be one that is not interest-based, that will eventually lead us back to a point where we realize that we don't need it at all. Personally, I can see a world with no money that would be much, much more functional than the one we currently have. It's very difficult for me to explain it to you, because if you can't see it for yourself, then you'll probably never figure it out. And the only reason that you wouldn't be able to see it is because of the commercial system that's been superimposed over your mind, because, as I said, this is an extremely difficult program to break. But I personally can see what the world would look like without money, and I think it would be a truly wonderful place. And no, I'm not a communist for saying that. I'm not any type of ist. I don't believe in any type of ism. As I've often said, the only ism that I would put my hand up to say that I believe in would be free-ism, if you could even call such a thing an ism. But that would be the only ism that I would be interested in, folks. I think any other type of ism would simply be ism-ism, and that is something that I just don't do. But, folks, look, I think what I'm attempting to say with this show here is that it's important for people to pay attention to what's going on around them. It's important for people to get involved. And you don't need to join any ism or go down the path of any movement in order to do so. All you have to do is become aware of the global situation, become aware of the national situation, become aware of the situation in your own country, in your own town, in your own neighborhood, and apply yourself to the world around you. Now, getting to know your neighbours is a huge part of it, and always coming to the defence of your neighbours and the defence of your friends if you see them suffering any abuse at the hands of this system. If you see anybody in your community suffering abuse at the hands of this system, it's important that you stand up for their rights and go into bat for them with everybody else. It's important the whole community stand up in these situations, because if you see someone in your community getting fined for having chickens free in their yard, this means that you can't have chickens free in your yard. And if you're the sort of person who thinks, oh, well, they should be fined for having the chickens out in their yard, then I suggest you get a life and wake up to reality, because you would only feel that way because you enjoy seeing authority being inflicted upon someone else, because it makes you feel better about the slavery system that you live within that you fail to admit to yourself. That's the only reason anyone would like to see someone around them being victimized by authority, folks, is because it makes them feel better about the authority that victimizes them constantly that they are too scared to face. And this is unfortunately a very sociopathic trait that has been installed into most people via the mechanism of this system, by the mechanism of the education system in particular. It's very sad to see people that are that petty and that vindictive against other people in their neighborhood. But what I'm trying to say here, folks, is that if there is one person being repressed, then it is everybody who is being repressed. If there is one person who is having their freedoms removed and their rights taken away from them, then it is everybody who is having their freedoms removed and their rights taken away from them. Because what applies to one applies to all. That's the thing, folks. And we have to remember that the people that are doing this are not our rulers. They are not our controllers. They are simply public trustees that we appoint to manage our infrastructure for us. They're abusing their power. They're in breach of trust. They're stealing the wealth of the nation. They're doing it in every Western country, and they're getting away with it because we live in disunited communities. And that's why I pushed this message so hard for so many years on these shows now, because it isn't until you wake up to yourselves out there and start putting down your stuff with people and start uniting as a community, stop chasing commercial goals and trying to indulge in commerce all the time, stop trying to set yourself up as being commercially viable and having a good business, and start participating in the real world and participating in real life and helping real people around you, and you'll make a difference. But if you're going to choose to immerse yourself in commerce and always do things from a commercial perspective and from a commercial motivation for your actions because you expect monetary gain or financial security from your actions, then you're just being part of the problem and you're just helping perpetuate this system of slavery. So you've got to step above the commerce, folks. I mean, sure, we need to collect the paper we need to survive at this particular time in life. We do. It's an unfortunate fact of life. But don't make that the motivation in your freedom fighting. Don't make that the motivation in your environmental practices, in your building of community around you, because if you do, all you're going to do is create a wedge in the community and you're going to further divide the community. Don't use financial incentive as inspiration for fixing the planet, is what I'm saying, folks, because you won't find any remedy in anything commercial. You have to be in your heart, in your actions, and you need to be operating from a real heart space and a real center of compassion for the world and a real center of empathy for the people around you in order to have any real positive effect. And it's important that people really do pay attention to the energetic state that they're in all that they do. I think that's something that is most important, folks, and it's something that many people just fail to look at and fail to pay attention to. But it's something that we can all ask ourselves, folks. What is your real intention, and what is your deepest emotional state in all that you do? What is your deepest motivation in all that you do? Because if you find that it's centered in commerce, then, well, you're on the wrong track right from the start, because commerce is what we really need to get away from more than anything else. Commerce is the source of most of our problems. As I mentioned on the show last week, folks, you can trace the source of all wars, all pollution, all social degradation, homelessness, starvation, the destruction of the rainforest and the environment in general, the pollution of our groundwater. You can trace all of this back to a common cause, which is the imposition of commerce over the human experience and the need and willingness of mankind to always support the economic model above the needs of mankind. That is the source of all of the problems that we face, folks. And again, this only lasts and only remains in place because of the disempowered and divided state of the general community. But look, I think we're at the end of the show here, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there for now. Thank you to anybody who's ever helped me. Thank you to anybody who's ever made a contribution to the website. Thank you for the kind emails that you send me. Thank you for the spate of books that I've received recently from people as well. Unfortunately, I don't know who sent a lot of the books because there wasn't letters in there, and so I'm having trouble replying to the people who did send them to me, but I'm sure if you're out there listening, then you know who you are, and you can rest assured that your packages did arrive, and I am very much enjoying the books that you sent me, so I thank you very much for that. But I'm completely out of time now, so I'm going to have to leave it there, folks. Thank you very much for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. In Lakesh.